Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
All right, welcome back to Delve, everybody. And on this episode, we are continuing our conversation about the hero's journey with Stage 2, Initiation. Don't you want to be initiated, Alex?
Start the rituals.
Okay, no, I don't think we had to start the ritual. Kalima. No, we're not going to do that.
Kalima.
Oh my goodness. We haven't even talked about Indiana Jones in all of this. That's surprising. Initiation. There's a few different phases in initiation. The first one is probably one that you're very familiar with, which is called the Road of Trials. Or as I like to think of it, comprising the major weight of your journey, you need to do a challenge montage. Basically, this is Rocky doing the getting strong now part.
This is Mulan, let's get down to business.
Let's get down, yeah, exactly, to defeat the Huns.
Let's get down to business.
Oh, we're gonna get copyright.
This isn't YouTube, we're fine. Oh, wait, that's
yeah, we're fine.
On YouTube.
Okay, this is Luke on Dagobah with Yoda, learning how to be a Jedi.
Learning how to carry his toad through a marsh.
Learning how to carry a toad through the marsh, yes. He's Kermit, but in space. You've learned that much.
Stop it now. Sorry, I'm thinking of the seagulls.
Yeah. There's a lot of different ways that you can look at this, but basically this is the part where you have to go through a bunch of trials. In a lot of ways, if we were looking back to mythology, this is the majority of the Odyssey. This is basically the entire journey home for Odysseus and his crew. I think that in a lot of ways, maybe you see this in games just because you're going to be taking your party through various conflicts in the middle now that they've kind of gotten past the first big hurdle and now have to go on a journey to really become the very best like no one ever was.
This is every time Goku needs to train to fight a new boss in DBZ.
Yeah, this is the road of trials for him. This is the road of trials for Ash, every time he goes to a new region to battle, to battle in a new championship. That's essentially this. In terms of Harry Potter, actually, this is the actual school year for them. Every time they get to year 1, 2, 3, and etc. It's an important thing. You go through a lot of these challenges, they inform the rest of the story, and I think that it's something that occasionally happens organically, sometimes it might feel a little bit forced, but in terms of gaming, it's really just putting in the work into your character development, and learning, and growing, and meeting people, and making connections, and growing your level, and everything like that. It's your grind.
This is where you take side quests.
This is where you do all the side quests. Yeah. The Road of Trial is basically a whole bunch of side quests that you do to level up. Can you think of any other examples? I'm trying to think how this relates to The Little Mermaid, since apparently that's our common theme here.
I don't know if it can relate to The Little Mermaid. She doesn't really have many trials aside from learning how to walk on legs.
In that thinking, though, I can't believe we're trying to apply this to The Little Mermaid. But Ariel kind of does have to go through a number of trials learning how to be human.
Oh, that's true. That would be her trial.
Yeah, her trials is in a new world, learning how to live in that world.
With a new fantastic kind of you?
A part of that world, yeah. So that does happen. It's not necessarily in every single story, but I would definitely say that in things like Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, you definitely see that. The whole Two Towers saga is basically just a list of different trials that they're going through as just armies start to descend upon them. Next part, the meeting with the goddess. Important to note, not necessarily female, might be a god, might be a non-human-like figure at in general. You experience a transformative and transcendent love but it's not like a rom-com or anything. There's there's something to be said about, usually when you are at a point in your quest, sometimes when things are looking their bleakest, something kind of almost supernatural comes to you and creates a transformative experience in you that allows you to continue on.
All the supernatural, everything's supernatural, can't just be...
I think that that's kind of a common theme, though. A lot of heroes' journeys, as we think about them, have several different kinds of supernatural characters that, you know, come along, and...
That might be a good realization, because it's all focused on the myths as well, and those tended to have gods or supernatural creatures and figures in them a lot.
I'm trying to remember exactly, like, if I were to take this back to the Odyssey, I think that there was actually a goddess in that particular case that Odysseus was familiar with, who was trying to push him forward, even though Poseidon was really angry with him.
Was it Athena? She usually does that.
It wouldn't surprise me. It would not surprise me. That
she's
sounds
the one who pushed Kratos
right.
forward.
Mm.
Off a cliff.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, he jumped.
Yeah. Yeah, that might have been the case. I can't really remember now. So the general idea is that something supernatural comes to your aid, that is not just pushing you forward in your story, but is also transforming the hero as a character.
Genie, see?
Yes!
I knew we'd make the reference for Genie. And Ursula.
And Ursula! Yes! Actually, that is very true. Ursula may be not a great example of that.
Best example.
But
plot twist.
I actually think the next part will probably be more relevant for Ursula. But I would say Genie probably is a good example of that. In Lord of the Rings, though, that would be Galadriel, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Galadriel comes to Frodo in like a vision to tell him that he has to continue on the quest, even after he's been through all the trials. It's definitely not Gollum. Gollum's a whole different... Actually, Gollum's going to fall into the next part of this.
Yes, my precious.
Which is probably a good way to segue into it. So the next part is referred to as the Temptress, and I will say that, again, not necessarily female, not necessarily even human. But this is where you spurn temptation that threatens to force you from the chosen path because you have a duty to perform, and that's possibly through punching. But basically, this is, I would say, this is where, like, a Gollum and an Ursula come along. That you are tempted to stray from that path, and you have to shirk that. Gollum says, no, but the rings is... You want the rings as a power.
Jesus, master.
Oh, no. And then Frodo has to be able to spurn that and say, no, I'm not going to be tempted by the ring. I'm not going to be tempted by the ring. Star Wars, I would say that it's definitely that Luke is being pulled to the dark side. It's that realization that, you know, I might become Vader. And that lore of power might be something, but then he has to shirk that. He has to throw that off to the side. Ursula, I think, is probably an agent of that. Is it constantly tempting Ariel to kind of like throw off any responsibilities that she might have for something that might be appealing to her. You don't usually see a lot of heroes' journeys that eventually go, no, actually, I'm totally going to be tempted, and now I'm going to go down that road. And actually the Odyssey is a really good example of this because, as you probably remember, there
nope.
were the sirens.
Oh,
remember?
I haven't, do you know the last time I've read the Odyssey?
Probably about the last time I read the Odyssey.
Probably never.
Probably never. Okay. So probably more recently than I did, but there's the famous thing of where the sirens. The siren's call is leading them, and so Odysseus has to tell all the crew, You can't be tempted by the sirens because they're going to lead you onto the rocks, so they have to put the wax in their ears.
Yes.
To avoid that temptation so that they can steer clear of the rocks so that they don't get they don't get shipwrecked.
And eaten by sirens.
And eaten by sirens. Exactly. But then there's the next one where they end up on, what is it, the island of Circe, where the nice lady that's there tells them, hey, here's a whole bunch of food, and Odysseus doesn't want to eat it because he's not sure about it, but, like, his whole crew does, and they all turn into the pigs because that was the temptation, and they fell to it, and he had to reject it, even though he was very, very hungry. If we were looking at, like, a tabletop game, have you ever experienced... Because I don't think that's necessarily seen in a lot of tabletop games where, well, I say that...
You say that. People fall to temptation in tabletop all the time.
Come to think of it, you're right.
That is the entire class of warlock.
And come to think of it, Rembrandt got tempted by some pretty shiny swords.
Yeah, and there's sirens and succubi and incubi.
Yep.
And nymphs.
Yep.
Lots of things that'll tempt you.
Yeah.
Magic weapons, cursed weapons, intelligent weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Temptation is real in D&D.
There's a whole lot of things that can give you untold power, but there is a cost to them if you pick them up.
And sometimes people forget about the cost to them and just use them willy-nilly like god things.
Yeah, that's also my favorite thing to do in gaming. So the next part is one I see a real correlation to with one particular piece of media, but the atonement with the father... Or as I like to put it, you confront your dad, and it's awkward, and maybe you become the dad. You probably know what I'm thinking of right now.
I've become the dad.
Well, but actually, it sort of is that. But
no, like that's improbable.
That's improbable. Well, but the idea that you become the figure that you have now confronted.
Right.
So, obviously, the thing I think about is indeed Star Wars.
Yeah, that's when Luke gets his hand chopped off, and he's like, oh, you can't be my dad.
Yeah, it's like you've been confronted with your dad, and your dad is like, you know, come join the dark side, and... eventually, you actually see that Luke loses his hand, just like Anakin had lost his hand, and there's a different correlation. Later on, this actually repeats in Return of the Jedi, because at that very end stage, where Vader has like essentially a redemption arc, and Luke ends up making peace with all of that. Basically, let me see if I can find something that explains this a little bit better. I'll actually use one of the quotes from Campbell on this. So, the magic of the sacraments, the protective power of primitive amulets and charms, are mankind's assurances that the arrow, the flames, and the flood are not as brutal as they seem. One must have faith that the Father is merciful, and then a reliance on that mercy. He put it a whole lot more eloquently than I ever could. But this is basically the confrontation with your ultimate force of the storyline. That's not necessarily your enemy or something that is a problem, but it's definitely something you have to overcome. I would say maybe in Harry Potter, it's a little bit more about Snape.
Severus Snape Dumbledore.
Yeah, I kind of figure Dumbledore not necessarily as much. I think it's for Harry, he has to come to terms with Snape, who's not necessarily the villain of the piece, but is definitely a figurehead that has to be overcome. I'd be interested to know if people have a different interpretation of that when it comes to Harry Potter. But in a lot of ways, there is definitely a theme in a lot of heroes' journeys that usually your actual father or actual mother in the story. Maybe for them to accept that you are who you are, or for you to come to terms to accept that they are who they are before the story moves forward. And maybe sometimes they're, you know, a really powerful force user that can, like, slay entire hallways worth of rebel soldiers.
Yeah,
you never know.
Like Vader.
Apotheosis. So, after confronting and becoming the father within...
I thought you were going to say, after becoming the father.
Well, it actually, it is after confronting and becoming the father within, you can then rise to the status of godhood, or I'm going to say god adjacent. You can be god adjacent.
One of these days, we're going to have to break down why all these things all have to do with so much of familial stuff.
Yeah.
Not today.
Freud would probably have something to say about that.
Freud would have a lot to say about
that. Yeah, he sure would. But it actually, if you think about it, especially in a lot of YA fiction, if we were to look at, you know, we've been talking about Harry Potter, or if we were talking about, like, Hunger Games, Divergent, anything like that, there are definitely some very, very important, strong themes when it comes to the lineage of the parents to the children, and generation to generation. I actually kind of even remember it in Farscape, because John's dad is, like, a central character at the very beginning of the show, right?
I guess, kind of. I don't think John becomes his father. I think it's more following in his dad's footsteps as an astronaut, maybe? Because the whole thing is, like, you know, between him and his dad, where he's like, you've become your own hero, you know?
Well, they obviously had a much healthier relationship than most heroes in most of the history.
Yeah.
But actually, for Lord of the Rings, since that's usually used for the epic journeys anyway, I would say that it has a little bit to do with how Bilbo ended up going on his journey, and then how Frodo ends up going on his journey, because they're very, very different. Bilbo, in a lot of ways, falls to temptations along the way and ends up wanting to keep the ring. And then Frodo eventually makes the decision to go on the journey to eventually eliminate the ring. I would say, though, since we're talking about Little Mermaid a lot in these episodes, I think that there's a little bit going on with like, Ariel and King Triton, that King Triton doesn't really want Ariel to go off on her own and go to the surface world, and she kind of has to shirk her responsibility as a princess, and then that has to be rectified as from like, the father to the child. So there's a little bit of that, but I do notice that, like, in the whole process that we're talking about, there is a strong focus on that parents to children, and then the children eventually becoming the parents, and rising up above where the parents kind of were to begin with, as a generational idea. There's definitely this sense in the apotheosis part of initiation where you essentially become the father figure.
You become the Pope.
You become the Pope, and then you start a crusade. No, you become the Pope, and then you rise to what, I'm going to say God adjacent, because not necessarily, but you have taken on the kind of power that you thought was reserved for those very important figures that have led you to this point.
You gain the mantle of Thor.
I guess in terms of Thor, I guess that's, he has to come to the realization that Odin had issues in the past that he had to live down, and now he has to be better than Odin after Odin is gone, and be a better version of a god than Odin was, now that he understands that Odin and Hela did some pretty bad stuff once upon a time. And then Loki's there, and Loki didn't learn any of the lessons. And then we get to the ultimate boon. So, basically, congratulations. You've now achieved godhood.
Hooray! Yeah. Play that sound effect where the kids are cheering.
Yeah. You access the gifts of gods and can punch all the bears. Congratulations. Are you glad that you are now able to punch all the bears?
Oh, I just throw the bears into orbit.
That also works. This is the hero's access to the gifts of the gods is a car, and you can use it to punch all the bears off a road. That's how this works. How does the ultimate boon work? Well, you know, I think that this kind of is the place that a Luke Skywalker would be at the beginning of the Return of the Jedi in a lot of ways. You know, he's gotten very powerful, he's gone through all the training, you are prepped for the final conflict, Aragorn's gotten his, you know, posse of the dead army folks, so that he can wipe out a whole bunch of orcs, This is that point in the story. Harry's graduated from school, and he's learned everything that Hogwarts can teach him. Katniss has started her revolution. She's learned, you know, everything that she can about the Hunger Games, and now she just wants to take on actual presence. No, it's that part. Your hero is now essentially fully formed and at the height of their power. Kind of an important step, I would say, especially leading into the return. Do you see any of this relating to, like, a tabletop game in a Dungeons & Dragons?
I mean, sometimes players get really powerful, like, objects, and they become really powerful, and then maybe you've got to topple them. Like, they're right at the top of their game, they've, like, saved the town, they're hailed as, like, heroes, then a new challenger awaits.
Right. This is, in many ways, where Ash Ketchum catches, like, the Mewtwo. And there's not a lot of other places for Ash to go, but up, until there's another thing that... But he is now fully prepared for what is going to await him. But you made an interesting observation there, which is that this does feel like the part where some heroes' journeys might turn into the villain's journey.
Oh, well, I wasn't even trying to make that point, but sometimes it's like, that's also where some people end their journey.
Yeah, yeah. There is no real resolution, except that, you know, congratulations, you have won.
Congratulations, you're the new god.
You're the new god. Hope you like that. The old gods. You're the new god. Yeah, I can definitely see, and this is not something that's really talked about in the hero's journey, because it is very much about that monomyth and the structure therein. But this does feel like the kind of thing where you could essentially see a character become... that this is almost the start of a villain arc after you've gotten to this point. So I will just, I'll read another excerpt from Campbell about this. Might help to kind of like put a little capper on this episode, but, the gods and goddesses then are to be understood as the embodiments and custodians of the elixir of impoverishable being. What the hero seeks is their grace, the power of their sustaining substance. Its guardians dare release it only to the duly proven. But the gods may be over-severe, over-cautious, in which case the hero must trick them of their treasure. This is essentially the ultimate boon. This is the hero rising to that level of godhood and getting all the things. In a lot of ways, you're right. That is probably where many heroes' journeys will end. But
that's
not
where
ours.
Our journey... That's where our journey ends, right? That's about where like our a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
At our peak.
Before we became the villain?
Wow. Wow.
Before we became the villain. That's fine.
I don't know if I'd consider us villains.
Oh, well, depends.
We're villains in our own story.
If we're the villains of our own story, we played ourselves. That is where some heroes' journeys might actually end. However, that's not necessarily where our journey ends. I would say that going back to the Odyssey...
You go back to that Odyssey a lot.
I go back to the Odyssey only because I imagine since Campbell was a studier of mythology, and that's really one of the most famous mythological stories, I imagine he was drawing from it quite a bit. But I would say that when we get to the Ultimate Boon, this is actually where the trials are all over, and... Odysseus is coming home after being essentially told that he doesn't have to. There's a part where Odysseus has the possibility of living a perfectly nice, happy life away from home, having succeeded in all of his trials and everything like that. And that is where the story could have ended for him. But he doesn't. Because what he engages in is the third phase of the hero's journey, which we're going to be talking about on the next episode, which is the return.
Of the episode?
The return is the phase three.
The return of what, though?
Oh, we're going to tell you. the return.
Stay tuned as we return.
We will be back with part 3. The return. And so that completes phase 2 initiation of the hero's journey. One editorial note that I will make concerning the Odyssey is, believe Alex actually, even though he doesn't seem to remember anything about the story, I believe was indeed right. Athena would have been the goddess that intervened on behalf of, well, the gods, like Zeus, to keep Poseidon in line to try and help Odysseus out. In terms of what I was thinking about with Odysseus having a nice, happy life that he could be in, I may have possibly been thinking about once he got to Phoenicia and he had a somewhat semblance of life, but he was always looking to get back to Ithaca. I think I've forgotten more about some of these stories than I've remembered. But anyway, we will return with, well, the return, which is part 3, on the next episode. Until then, you can always find everything that we've done on Delve for the entire time we've been up and operational over at DelveCast.com. Please make sure to check on our Patreon banner. There's a lot of additional exclusive content for our patrons, even if you are just donating at like $1. And that is content that will continue on even after we have rebranded, because I still want to make sure that all that content is still viable. Obviously, why not utilize it? And if you do not know, you can also find us on the magical thing called the internet on Twitter. I am at Citanium, Alex is at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast. Also, thank you very much to our shiny level patrons, Bonnie Ainsworth and Drunk Paul over on Discord. Thank you for getting us to a level 1 Discord server. Okay. We will return on next week's episode with the third and final part of the hero's journey. Thank you for joining us again on this episode, and be ready to join us for that one final installment as we come full circle in our hero's journey.